way too much stuff.
Call to order in 2 minutes. Please get your sandwiches. Be less social.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
But I think Tom was sitting here.
The meeting will start in 1 minute. Call to order, please. We only have 2 hours.
Oh,
please.
You know, I wasn't there to listen to the case as much as listen to how the structure created another problem. You know, I was more interested in how did that happen? What was within the approval process of writing checks? And that's what I was listening to.
Okay, I'm calling this meeting to order. We have a quorum. If you don't want to attend, if you talk, do so outside. We only have 2 hours, and we've lost some time there. We have a full agenda. So having done that, I'm Elliot Axelband. I'm serving as the chair of this meeting. I'm the vice chair of this committee. The chair of this committee is out of the country on vacation. So that's the reason for that. We're going to try and follow this agenda and cover it. Because it doesn't require your cooperation, I know I will have that. I guess it's customary to go around the table and just say who you are. I've said who I am, and on my left we have...
Hi, everyone. I'm Dan LaVista. I'm the district chancellor. Good to see you.
Richard Slauson, at-large representative.
Nabil Abu-Ghazali, president of West L.A. College.
Dan Swartz, taxpayer representative.
Barb Hoffman, LACC representative.
Robert Schwartz, I'm executive director of LACC Foundation.
Donna Smith, Pierce College representative.
Dave Gomez, labor representative.
Ethel McClatchy, senior representative.
Any other board members? Any other committee members here?
Yeah. Bob Courtney.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Bob Courtney, at large.
Okay. Welcome, especially to the new members. I know this is going to seem a little confusing. We have a pattern, and I'll try and explain parts of it as we go through the meeting. The first subject on the agenda is an update to the Board of Trustees representatives. And several of us were at that meeting. I was there too, and I thought it was a good meeting. I guess it was chaired by Miguel Santiago, who is the chairman of the Board of Trustees. We reviewed with him, for the most part, our annual report, which will be released in January, I think. And he made some comments, and one of the comments that I'd like to pass on to you, which I thought was especially important and instructive and accurate, was, you know, this committee as a group has been criticized by the state auditor, state controller's report, in which they said we were ineffective and ineffectual, and a third thing which carries the same connotation. And so he asked, well, how were you, and why was that the case, and what's being done about it? So my answer to that question is, yes, we were. Okay, and the principal reason we were is because we were denied the data we need to operate. We're supposed to oversee the construction of bond funds. We never got the data that provided in any depth that was required the usage of bond funds, where they were on plans, and so forth. We as a committee asked that many times. We also asked for a lawyer to represent us, which we saw legal right. That was put aside and never happened. It's a long conversation. I don't want to bore you with it. But I pointed out we have a new administration that's midterm. Things are going much better. We have decided as a group not to meet four times a week. We meet six times a week with the chancellor and with Tom. With the chancellor, we set our committee meetings, so we make sure that all relevant topics get done. We have attacked the question of trying to make the financial data available and readable. Okay, and we have set up, and that's the next topic, so I'm just going to mention it here, advisory committees, which can extend the working hours of this committee. They just can't make any decisions. They can only come back, get data, and advise this committee. So we've done a lot of things that are putting us in a better position to do the job we're supposed to do. We were in an impossible position, in my opinion, before. You'll see some of that today, and you'll see it for the first time, and it'll look a little strange, but we'll talk about it and explain what it provides. Now, that's my summary of the highlights of the meeting with the Board of Trustees. Dan, do you want to add to that, or Nancy, do you want to add to that? Now, one of the things that was told to us by Miguel is, well, make sure that's in the annual report. Okay, make sure that in addition to what you've reported, you have reported the progress that has been made and the reason why, maybe not in black and white terms, you intend to be better structured, better focused, better accomplished going forward. And I only mention that comment because in the draft of the annual report that was handed out to all of us, mailed to us and so on, I couldn't find those comments. I could find the comments about the improvements we've made. I could not find the comments about the fact that we're getting data now that we were denied in the past, which interfered with our progress.
That may be, if I may, that may be a question of time, because the time frame, am I correct on this time, that this report covers may not have included some of the improvements that have occurred since the end of that period.
The improvements are covered in this report. What's lacking is a discussion of the fact that we didn't have these things in the past, which an explicit comment that we didn't have these things in the past. Okay, and that's why we going forward we think we'll do a better job. That, in my view, and others attended this meeting, so they can comment, was specifically what Miguel asked us to do.
Could I ask you a question about the meeting?
Can we get a question first from the people who were there?
Okay,
please hold it for a second.
So this report is for the year 2010-2011, which ended in July, and I know that there's a lot of stuff that we have done since July that will show up in the next report.
Yeah. The issue, Tom, is not what we have was doing differently. That's in that report. The issue, the kernel issue, is some specific address of the fact that we didn't have these tools in the past, and that's why we weren't as effective as we intended to be. That's what I thought he was asking for. Maybe you disagree, but you don't think he was asking for that addition. Please.
I believe the chancellor at that meeting suggested more moderate language, and I don't have my notes before me, but Dr. Lissa, I recall taking notes, and we did talk about the your statement about that information is being provided in a more timely manner, as opposed to, casting aspersions about past practice and the like, that we would go forward with a more positive statement. And so, Tom, if you don't have any notes, I'll try to provide you.
Just a factual
piece.
Thinking that we had something to that effect, but we'll be back.
Okay. I don't mean to be unfactual, I do mean to be transparent.
And I think that was what the chancellor's intent was, which was that the reports are being produced and they're being provided in a more timely manner than in the past.
Well, it's more than timeliness, but I'm satisfied with the degree to which our improvements are addressed. I'm satisfied that that's in there. What is not, and we should discuss this, it is the fact that we didn't have these things, not just finding them in the past.
Yes, I just wanted to remind the chair that item number 5 is the annual report for review and approval. And under that item on the agenda, we can bring it up, and if you can suggest some language, maybe all of the committee could adopt it.
Okay. So we'll move on and bring that up under item 5. Now, especially the new inductees, the new members, heard that this committee is open and transparent. It meets under the Brown Act. Everything has to be exposed to the public. And you also know that we only meet 6 times a year, 2 hours a shot. Okay, and we don't always have quorums there, which are necessary to vote, so I hope we will in the future. However, that's a very constraining set of relationships. There is a way, and Camille suggested it, and we have adopted it, of trying to expand the work we do, not usurp the voting rights of this committee, but gather data so we can be better informed. And that's in the form of subcommittees, if you like. We have 2. One is an advisory committee, and one is an executive committee. Those committees, and Camille will correct me, please, if I say it wrong, are composed of less than 50% of the members of the board. They can meet, they can phone each other as subcommittees, and they can take on specific tasks, like looking at the work of the Inspector General more closely, for example, looking at the financial reporting system more closely, for example. And we have those, and we will call them to action from time to time. Our executive committee is only 4 people, actually. Our advisory committee, I think we have room for 1 or 2 additional members. Now, again, if you're on an advisory committee, you get to work on what the advisory committee as a group thinks is important. And you research matters which are then brought back to the board for discussion and recommendation, including recommendations that can lead to votes. So if several of you or any of you would like to, and it takes more time, it's not 6 times a week, but it takes more time. So if any of you would like to serve on the advisory committee and not on that committee now, since I'm here, please contact me. Okay, because we have room for a spot or 2. And then a reminder, it was said to the new inductees, it was said that the chair and vice chair are elected annually. The election will be at the February meeting, which is 2 months from now. There is no notion of continuity of service. Okay, in other words, having been a president doesn't entitle you to be a president again. Having been a vice chair does not entitle you to inherit the chairship. It's a clean election from the start. In particular, as it concerns the chair, she is coming up against a term limit, so she will not be eligible. So we'll have that election when we meet next. I'd like to move on to the next subject unless somebody has a comment that they didn't make and would like to have made.
I had a question with regard to the trustee meeting.
Yes.
I believe that was a topic was discussed with regards to the extension of the moratorium.
Okay. You're asking about a meeting that the trustees had with themselves?
No.
No?
At the public meeting. Did the issue come up with regard to the
I was not referring to a public meeting. I was referring to a private meeting. But he can maybe answer the question.
Barb, are you speaking of the trustee meeting held this past Wednesday?
Right.
Yes. The moratorium was the central item in the Capital Construction Committee meeting, and I'll be addressing that later in this meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
So then I'd like to go on and ask if there are any public speakers who would like to speak. There aren't any. Let's discuss the minutes. You all have copies of the minutes. May I, again, addressing the new members, say that these minutes are distributed in advance of the meeting in which they're discussed, and it's very appropriate if your notes disagree with the minutes or find something lacking, it's very appropriate to forward your comments.
I move we accept the minutes as published.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Call for a vote. All those in favor of
aye.
The minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
Didn't ask for abstain yet. One abstention, all the others voted yes. The minutes are accepted. Now the discussion on, this is going to be a record-setting meeting. Now the discussion on the draft, it's a draft, of the annual report. I just want to go back to the one comment I made and then open it to other comments. Is there a need, do you feel, those who attended the meeting, I gave you my interpretation. Is there a... Were you pointing out?
Oh, no.
Okay. Is there a need for a stronger statement about the fact that in the past, which we're improving from, we were not provided the data we needed to actually monitor the process?
Since this annual report goes from July to July, and so that which we were doing to get that, you know, data and so forth, take place after July?
The improvements took place, many of the improvements took place in this time period, and the denial of data also took place in this time period.
Okay.
They are both contemporary with this report. So it's not a contemporaneous issue. It's a question of what we want to say about these things. And it's a difficult issue, I recognize.
Well, since it was brought up by Mr. Sempel.
That's my interpretation.
If that's what he brought up and it wasn't concerned for him, maybe it needs to be put in.
That's my interpretation, but there are others here who are at the meeting. That's why I'm asking for their comment. Oh. And we got one comment. Does anybody else have a comment?
Not from the meeting, but on the subject.
Okay.
First, I'm in the dark as to what information we're talking about that wasn't provided.
Yeah, simple. You will see today for the first time, okay, what used to be called the stoplight chart, and for the very first time, you'll find both cost and schedule variances on it. We never got that information. Neither one of those did we get them. Okay, what we got was shows. Okay, pictures and so on in progress, but not hard data. That was the problem.
Which are you talking about?
Let's find it now.
This one?
Colors. Yes, that's the one. And I'll review that.
So what you would like to have is a statement saying what?
If I had a credible statement, that's fine. My statement is the following, that somewhere in this document it said all these improvements have taken place, and in addition, we now have visibility of the construction status, which enables us to perform our primary duty.
You don't want to say now, because that's post-July 1. You got the point, Thomas. Anything July 1 is inappropriate in this report.
Well, then let me phrase what I said differently. What I said before is true. This is the first time we have both. But over this period of time, okay, the reporting on construction has improved. It's now even gotten better.
Okay. And you would say that's an accurate statement for the July 1 to June 30th?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
It's even gotten better, though. That's what I'm really sure about. So, if nobody remembers it differently, we have two different interpretations, each equally valid. Neither one of us has our notes with us. I'm going to leave that to this. I mean, I'm going to leave that to Tom's discretion unless somebody has a comment.
Still not understanding. This is the report that was through June 30th of this year.
Right.
And prior to June 30th of this year, we were discussing changes and implementing changes in material that we would want from the district's facility from facilities. And had we requested this kind of information prior to that?
Yes, I requested it personally.
So the statement that you made that we have begun during that period of July through June to receive expanded materials that have allowed the committee to make a more appropriate review of the
construction
bond program.
If I may, it's always risky to speak for your board president. I think anybody does that at his own peril. But I think this is what Richard says, I think where Miguel is going. I think that the appropriate timeframe allows you to see that some requests had been made and delivered upon.
Yes.
And the expectation of the DCOC was that that would be a foundation for continued improvement, which in next year's report we can talk about in space.
We got staff support,
we got a lot of other things happening, but I don't think he was introducing that for any other purpose than that.
Okay, so we have two interpretations versus one. I'll go with that. I just want to correct something, if I may. The expectation and the initial realization of the improvement took place in this time frame. That's why I'm happy with the discussion of improvements, okay, and I'm happy that it's even getting better, and we're going to proceed better from there. So I think the issue is settled unless somebody wants to.
But you want that comment inserted in the report. Where are you pointing?
Well, on page 9, if you look at that, those are all actions that have taken place in DCOC's request. You know, so these are all items that you guys have asked for and have been accomplished, you know, as far as.
My only point was, I remember it and all that. Did it happen in that frame of time?
And I believe it did, and it's gotten better, but this is a good statement. This is a very good statement of things we've done that we can feel proud of. This is a very good statement. And I'll let it go at that, and I think most people at this point would as well. Okay.
Are you going to switch to a motion to adopt this report?
Yes, I guess I am. Thank you. Sorry. Details that have since happened that will be corrected in the final issue. Would anybody like to move to accept? Okay. Now, are you accepting this as a draft?
No, accepting it, you know, with the recommendation to move to the final.
So let me phrase it as I understand it more precisely. Accepted with the understanding that those positions which have been filled will be properly recognized. They were tentative, some of them at the time. And with the understanding that the publication date is not known, so it's XXX here, but it's going to be in January. Is that right?
We'll probably actually, after this meeting, then it'll be accepted and we'll use the base.
Okay.
Can we still make comments on this after the meeting?
You can make comments on it right now?
Well, I haven't had a chance.
Oh, sure you can. Of course you can. So will somebody move to then under
Well, if we're making comments after today's meeting, what are we doing here?
I was just about to... can I just say that, of course, you can make comments any time, but I think what we're trying to do here is have the committee adopt the report as its annual report, and so the comments wouldn't be included in changes to the report. In other words, the committee's expect, and if you adopt the report today, that's it. It gets published that way, with
the
couple of
typo
things.
Right.
But it gets adopted that way. So if there's a change to the report, this is the time.
Now, his comment was he hadn't read it, so he can't make comments now. But if there's anybody who's read it and wants to make comments, now is the time. So is there anybody who would like to do so? Okay, then.
I'll move that the committee adopt the draft report as the final report with the corrections that were identified at today's meeting.
Second.
Second.
I'm sorry, you have a comment?
Yes, just real quick. I was looking at my name. It says I'm retired. I'm not. And, I would like to be, but
those things will be correct. Okay, I don't know that. It also shows that you are.
That was that. Quite
that
a few
you're
years
a nominee,
ago.
And the board approved your appointment on Wednesday. Right. So
actually, there are two errors there in that section.
Okay, and the other one is.
She, her,
at the
Ethel's was wrong, incorrect.
Hers is incorrect, but she was here.
What's incorrect?
What's incorrect about it?
Her name's spelled wrong?
No, no, hers is incorrect in what her description of what she does. She gets, she was never a faculty member, and she's such and such.
Okay.
I don't remember what specifically, but it's wrong.
We'll make that correction.
And under Robert Schwartz, or as it's stated here, Robert E. Schwartz, is, the spelling's wrong and the occupation's wrong.
Could you tell us what those are?
Well, the occupation's from something that a business I owned 15 years ago. So it should be executive director of LA City College Foundation.
You know what we should do is send out an email to people and ask them for their correct spellings, their correct titles, whether they're retired.
We did try and call everybody on the list to get the titles, so I don't know.
Email is worse than, and I've spoken to everyone for their assistance to confirm the title, so going to email will.
Okay. Everybody seems to have an incorrect.
Is yours incorrect?
No, mine's fine.
Was the spelling, did you have a comment about the spelling? Schwartz?
No.
Well, did you have a comment about the spelling?
Well, it's just Robert, the first name, so.
Okay.
He has a Y at the end of it for some reason.
Are there any other things we can catch now?
Well, if we're correcting this, as it's going to go out, now I'm an at-large representative, and I'm listed here as a labor representative.
Are you on both columns? I think you are. Because he's got current members.
Yeah, he's showing them both.
Okay.
Yeah. All
right. Never mind.
We have a motion.
We have a double business card.
We have a motion to accept this as is with the provisos we've discussed. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? I voted for, by the way. Okay, so we've done that. The sixth item is one I recommended for the agenda, and I want to discuss it. It's a very complicated and emotional item, perhaps. It goes as follows. We are entitled, as our committee, to call for the services of a lawyer. It's been recommended to us, in fact, by some people, that we should have a lawyer. We requested a lawyer, actually, in this time period. And we were told that it was expensive.
It was what?
It was expensive. This comes out of the operating budget of LA Community College District. It's expensive. Let's think about it. It was brought up at the second meeting. We were meeting quarterly then, so 3 months went by. We were told the same thing. Okay, at the third meeting, it was announced that we now have an inspector general at the Community College District, and that she would be available to us as well. In fact, the chancellor on several occasions said, you can task her as a group, not individually, as a group. If you as a group vote to task the inspector general, she will respond to that, to those comments. Also, the inspector general is sitting behind us, behind you, not behind me.
Well, wouldn't that be...
Can I finish, please? Okay. The inspector general has generously said that any one of us individually can go to her office and talk with her about what she's doing and gather information in that regard. So the question I want to pose and then recognize you is, in addition to that, for the good of the committee, for the good of the district, okay, given the fact that we have been deficient in the past, should we again request the services of a lawyer, an independent lawyer? The notion being not a full-time person, not a half-time person, not a tenth-time person, somebody who could attend these meetings and after these meetings provide us observations that would be useful to us. That's simple, not expensive. That's my question, that's my proposition, discussion, and you had some comments.
Yes. You mean, the way I see it, okay, is that the district has set up the inspector general to be an organization that is at our disposal, so that when we get any issue that
We want to investigate it. That's all we have to do is call upon that office to investigate it. Now, are you talking about additional personal liability that you wanted, or did you want...
No, it's not a question of liability. It's legal advice. She's not a lawyer. It's legal advice. She functions as an auditor.
But doesn't she also have legal people on her staff?
Well, she can certainly consult with Camille and people on Camille's staff.
Well, and she's been given open access to the entire attorney panel as well.
So, you mean, here we have a resource at our disposal, okay, that will give us, you know, legal and auditing capability at our beck and call, okay? I would think that's enough.
My concern would be about hiring an attorney. Is most attorneys now have very specific areas of practice, and I'm not sure if we hired a particular attorney or even a firm, what area of practice we would want them to be a specialty. Bond counsel, construction law, employment law, Brown Act law. I mean, it gets to the point where I don't think you can find a generalist who can sit in a meeting and give us, for $800 an hour or something, give us much help. And I don't think we've defined what our legal agenda would be enough to find the right person. So I guess I'm kind of comfortable with the fact that we've got special access to our own investigator, and if there is anything that seems to be legal in nature that bothers her and she's not comfortable with the legal panel that's maybe beholden to LACCD, that then her advice comes back and says, I can't handle that. I'm not comfortable with the people who are assigned to me. You ought to find somebody on the outside that can handle this particular aspect of the law. And then I think you have to find who that lawyer is.
I like that.
I'm not speaking for her, I guess, but it seems like at our last meeting or meeting before, this was discussed a little bit, and the point of concern might be that does she have the time? Because I think it was the chancellor when we were asking about some issue, and I don't remember which one, that we wanted some service from the inspector general. You said that she really has a full boat, and I'm not so sure how much time she could give to whatever.
I also
do you remember that?
I sort of. I'm not.
I don't know if the chancellor does, but.
But he does. But I also, again, believe, and I'm asking you as a lawyer for an opinion. You're asked for that all the time. I also believe her serving in that capacity, Christine serving, the Inspector General serving in that capacity, would be a conflict of interest. Her allegiance is to LACCD. We would want an independent attorney, one who doesn't have what it seems to me.
Yeah. Maybe I could just step in, because Donna's memory is correct in the sense that I tried to explain during that discussion that remember that the Office of the Inspector General reports directly to the Board of Trustees. I am sort of the day-to-day connection between the IG and the Board, and am the person most responsible for ensuring adherence to the work plan that she and I with the Board have developed. It certainly is possible that, as was the case in the past year, that exceptions to the work plan can be made. And I have the authority to do that. So relative to issues that might be unearthed or about which this body is interested, or in which it is interested, I could assist there in working with the IG to identify ways to address them within the scope of work that the Board expects to have completed. Legal services is another matter. And I think that, you know, the point just made about it's a little bit of a form following function variation. You know, is there a need? It seems to me is what ought to be driving the decision. It's your decision to make. But it seems to me that, if I may say respectfully,
sure,
the recruitment of an attorney to sit here and observe and summarize for you seems to me not as focused a legal attorney opinion that you need. So I think you have said a couple of times you have no resistance to this.
No, I let me offer this thought. At the inception of the bond program, I consulted with bond counsel specifically on the question of, you know, counsel to this committee. Because this committee lacks separate legal capacity from the LA Community College District, it's really no different than the Associated Students of East LA College or the District-Wide Budget Committee or any other committee. You're an extension of the district. So there isn't an inherent conflict of interest, and as I've assured you in the past, I do try to keep an eye on the question if there's some kind of conflict of interest. So when members of this committee asked for getting copies of the Inspector General reports that we thought were confidential, I had Grover Trask come from Best Best and Krieger come and advise you on the issues that attach to that so that you were getting a separate opinion, and I'm committed to doing that on any occasion that is necessary. And if you have a question that you have that's about construction or it's about a particular thing, I'll be happy to assign counsel to come and advise you. As a matter of providing general support services, I'm a sunk cost in the general fund. But I'll be happy to engage any one of the panel firms for particular areas or concerns that you have. If you really want to have somebody on a generalized basis, we can do that. I'm just not sure that it's that effective a choice compared to having Steve Densmore, our lead construction counsel, come talk to you about the difference between design build change orders and design bid build change orders from a legal perspective, or whatever it might be. That's just an example, of course.
Kelly?
We'll just go around the room to several. Everybody will get a chance to speak.
So I just want to say I brought this up a couple times over the last year, and it was based on the experience that I learned, and you know, Richard to speak to directly, but my close colleagues that have served on LAUSD's Bond Oversight Committee said they felt having available counsel to them did strengthen the integrity of the process and provided the members of which, to some extent, we represent the taxpayer. So there are different interests that are important, you know, for us to be mindful of. I've said all along, I think it actually is in the interest of the district. I think it strengthens the chancellor and Camille and the trustees if we can represent that we have a high degree of independence and available expertise. And I do think it's bond oversight construction expertise. I don't think it's a advice about contracting or something. I think it's very narrow in terms of that. And given the challenges we've had over the last two or three years, I think we're better to err in this. I think it helps the district if we err on the side of doing this for, you know, a period of time and then subject to review. We do it for a year, and it may be that we decide long term it's not warranted. But right now, I think we're better off erring on the side of being able to have the highest degree of independence we can have. So my inclination would be to move to make a motion to do this, but I won't do it until others have had their opportunity.
Are there other hands?
Well, David, that was good. And I would only say maybe if we had a situation where we didn't necessarily have somebody full-time show up at a meeting, but maybe on call, or we have the flexibility if we see an issue, you know, of concern. We have a number of attorneys at the table that we might say, I think in this case we need to really secure some advice independently as opposed to just carte blanche. It would be my only thought, somewhat of a compromise.
I like what David said, and since we meet only six times, since the first year, do it six times, and because you could always change and say you don't need this person later, if that's so good. But it seems to me that that might be a good move right off the bat for the first year.
Bobby, you have a comment, and did you?
Well, I go along with Dan, and that is I feel that we have at our disposal a resource that will get us what you want, and that is that if indeed we uncover something that we need specialized legal support, I think we can go to the Inspector General, and she can draw upon those resources and get the money from the from the chancellor, okay, and the trustees to give us what we want. Okay, for us to now sit here and get a generalist, okay, to sit here, you know, for 12 hours in a year and to understand the complexity of this issue, okay, is wasting money from my perspective.
David mentioned that I had experience with this, and I sat on the Los Angeles Unified School District Bond Oversight Committee for 12 years. And that committee, after about the second year, I believe, did have full-time counsel to sit in at the meetings. I can tell you from that experience that the majority of the issues that the attorney actually dealt with was the selection process of the president, vice president, and other committee members, the legal aspects of it, the acceptance or non-acceptance of motions in proper order under Robert's rules and under legal processes. And maybe once or twice an issue of whether or not bond funds for as presented by the district were appropriately within the bounds of the expenditures contemplated under the bond. I agree, you know, having an attorney sitting next to you all the time is handy, but I wouldn't go beyond handy, because you, my experience is we really didn't have that many issues.
Unless it's an exceptional attorney.
You have to say that you have to apologize to Bob also.
Especially at, if you were sitting in front of a federal grand jury or something. But,
Daniel, you're going to have to apologize to Bob and to Robert.
We should take that into consideration, that we want to appear to be doing our job efficiently and with all of the respect for the process that we can muster, and that we have we really don't have a fiduciary responsibility, but we do have a responsibility to the public here in making correct decisions or recommendations. But at the same time, I think that if an issue ever came up that was that a large of an issue that we needed legal counsel at that time, we could select legal counsel. Just one other comment. There are many firms out there that are counsel for public agencies handling bond measures, issues that are not in-house attorneys that work for a firm and only attend the meetings when they are supposed to. So they are available, and I know quite a few of them in the Los Angeles area that do that.
Okay, so the absence of an appropriate attorney is not an issue in your view?
No. Okay. I just feel that if an issue came up, we could at that time demand that we have an attorney, independent attorney, look at a particular issue.
You and then you. Okay, this is the order of hands.
I was just going to ask Richard, since I don't recall LAUSD having any severe questionable problems like we've had, and such that and in all the papers and all these audits and so forth, because of where we are and what has happened, it would seem that maybe we would be in good stead to have somebody, at least for a year, to not only about who's going to be officers and all that kind of thing, but actually when they hear what's going on and what's being said and what's put in front of us, their advice might be very good.
Eva, you had your hand up.
I was with an organization with the Los Angeles Unified School District, and we retained Johnny Cochran based on a certain number of hours for each member. And if you needed your time, you could. So that might be one thing you'd like to look at.
Can I ask how many of you are attorneys or have training as an attorney? One?
Bob?
Yeah. So we have one.
Two years.
Okay.
In the businesses that I've been in, a big fear is the unk-unk, which stands for the unknown unknown, the thing you don't understand. However well you would like to understand it, you're not exposed to it, you don't have the background, the right people aren't there. That's part of my motivation, in addition to all the good statements that were made by those who feel we should have a lawyer, because it protects us, it protects the district, okay? That things can come up, with the exception of you, sir, who are a lawyer, things can come up which we don't recognize as problems. We don't have the training. And they manifest themselves at a later time in a more serious way. So that's another issue I wanted to bring up. I'd like to ask if there's any more discussion.
Well, in a counterpoint to your thing, don't we have the ability to engage, the counsel from the district?
Yes. Okay. Yes, but that's a conflict of interest.
I see a conflict of interest occurring from a personal point of view if I was getting sued. Okay, or if I did something malicious and there was an intent for me to defraud, okay, and then I see that, I would want the protection like we have in our public companies where there's a lawyer there all the time so that we can claim, lawyer-client confidentiality, okay. I see that, and that was one of my first questions when I got here. Okay, but this is a total open quorum, and we're guaranteed, as long as we don't violate the law, that, the district is going to support us. And they've given us now a tool to call in any specialty we want, not just a lawyer, but we can call in any specialty, whether it be construction, accounting, financial, performance. Okay, so, I think we're covered.
Have some comments?
I was just going to say that perhaps, since this would be the first breaking of the ice on discrete staff for the DCOC, and just kind of listening to the opinions here and drawing inferences from them, I wonder if it might be helpful to the membership to identify some small group from within this group that has a tendency for recruiting an attorney to develop essentially a job description. Purpose statement so that it would be definitive about what it is this person would do. Because I'm hearing even those who support the idea appear to be supporting it for different reasons. So, again, I want to communicate behind that I'm sort of neutral on this. I mean, if you feel you would be served well by having that support, then by all means, proceed. But I think in these times, any expenditure of funds is an expenditure of funds. And what I've asked you to do is what I ask staff to do when they make requests for personnel support. So because this is our first time we've really talked about this in detail, I would hope that before you would need to make a decision or a recommendation to the chair, that you have definitively what it is you would like this professional to do for you.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, if I may. The order of hands or so. I'm sorry, did you have a comment?
Oh, I was just going to mention that because the district has an established panel and an established process of soliciting work proposals from that panel, that the chancellor's suggested direction, once you agree upon it as a group, would give us the basis for soliciting from that panel.
I think, go ahead.
I'm actually a little concerned. Since I don't see a particular need at the moment, a particular project for this attorney to work on, I'm a little concerned about the optics of what it looks like for this group to be hiring an attorney. That always makes me nervous when people lawyer up.
Yeah.
Your comment?
Well, I mean, my concern is exactly opposite of Dan's, and I understand your proclivity. I think it is one to be mindful of. I think the opposite is we should be really clear to people that that we have looked self-critically at what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years, and we're challenging ourselves to discharge sort of the rights and duties and responsibilities of an oversight committee, And this is part of trying to do that in the most responsible way to the public. So I think you're right. There could be misperceived. It's done. I mean, I just think it's really clear that we would defend and explain it on that purpose.
I'm just recognizing people in the order in which I think they raised their hands. So
no, it's Richard.
This was nice. Fine.
I know what you're talking about in regard to what's happened in the last 3-4 years, but the problem with that is what's happened in the last three or four years. We've had a newspaper expose, and if you read the responses from the district, you'll know that those issues were addressed. Now, it was terrible that it came out in the largest West Coast newspaper that the district, and you know, making accusations at the district that they did this wrong, they did that wrong. But when you assess what really it was about nothing. It was a tempest in a teapot, as they say. And I think the district has gone a long way in making clear what the processes were, addressing the issues that were brought up. 2-year investigation that brought, I think, 6 accusations. And I know at least 3 of them. I could tell you offhand what the newspaper articles were 100% wrong in what they assessed. So, you know, what are we talking about? The district hasn't had malfeasance in office. They haven't misused funds. They haven't identified someone that has stolen money. They haven't done any of the things that might cause us to think that we need an attorney from what happened in the last 2 or 3 years. My only concern is that it's not necessarily prudent financially for the district. You're talking about not just meetings, you're talking about other time that attorneys would put into any issue that was brought up. To give you a response for every meeting in a written form would probably be a good 10 hours on a 2-hour meeting for an attorney. So you're not talking about just paying fees for a couple of hours of sitting here. If you want any kind of response from attorney other than they're just sitting here and listening and raise their hand if there was something inappropriate happened, there are lots of hours involved in hiring an attorney, usually on a retainer of some kind, minimal retainer of some kind, just to have them agree
to. It'll be $100,000 a year.
I don't know that it would be that much.
Oh, yeah, it will.
I do this stuff all the time, and I've never spent that for something like this.
But in any case, those are my concerns. You know, this is not bond fund money. I would be less opposed to hiring an attorney to sit in all these meetings if it was bond fund money, mm-hmm. which I personally believe that that's where it should come from, because it's directly related to our job of assessing what is happening to the fund. But it's not. It's coming out of the general fund of the Los Angeles Community College District. And if you read the newspapers in the last couple of days, you know that there's another $100 million being lopped off of school districts and other needed programs in the state of California. So I think it would be much better to have an attorney on an individual case-by-case basis if you thought you needed outside independent counsel. But I do 100% agree with the idea of having a committee to discuss it further, and if you want to talk to some attorney so you can get an assessment of what the cost would be, which I think would be appropriate for this committee to determine before any motion was made to go forward to hire an attorney, that we submit it to a committee, that we ask a couple of law firms to come in and give us an assessment of what their cost would be, and once we had an idea of really what they would do, and then move from there, bring it back to the full committee here.
You had a comment?
From hearing all the discussion, it seems to me like having district Camille sit in gives us covers the kind of thing that we have concerns about, and that is orderly running of a meeting, And I think she's in a position where she can identify situations where additional counsel might be required. The idea of this public image of what we're trying to do, I don't know if that is an issue that much at this time. So I don't know that an attorney specifically designated for this committee is really necessary, at least not at this point, unless something comes up that requires such action.
Is there any other discussion?
Clearly it's split. I would like to make a motion to see how the vote is, because I can tell we have a split vote. And
I was going to suggest that somebody do that. I'd like to make one comment. I would have no trouble writing a job description for such an attorney. It's really easy. You build on the work Camille has done that says what this committee is supposed to do and what its responsibilities are. Okay, and then you ask an attorney, in my view, to sit in these meetings and see if there is some legal angle, some aspect, something that be taken advantage of to do our job better. That's my view, but that's my last comment. I would entertain motions so we can see where we stand as a group. There's been discussion on all sides. Anyone?
So I would like to make a motion that we engage an attorney as consultation to us and sits at these meetings. And I certainly think we would ask the Chancellor and Camille to advise us on refining sort of the role and an appropriate process for selection, therefore, and a limitation. You know, we certainly should, because I don't agree with Dan's statement. I think you can do it for a very modest fee. But I think my motion would be to seek their advice to make sure that we contain it in a very modest way.
Do I have a second? Any discussion on the motion? And I call the question. All those in favor? 4. All those opposed? 7. The motion's defeated. Is there any other motions anyone wants to make on this issue?
I would like to make a motion that we appoint a committee to review and the needs for the oversight committee, determine what the appropriate outline for the duties of a advisory attorney for this committee would be, and to invite attorneys to provide a commentary and cost analysis of they're working for the oversight committee.
If I may suggest, that's entirely within the realm. We don't need a vote on this. It's entirely within the realm of the advisory committee to gather data of that sort from the sources you've talked about to form a position to come back to this committee with for a vote. As chair of the advisory committee, may I suggest that you call a meeting of the advisory committee and include that in the agenda?
There's only one that's fine with me, but I have one disagreement. To get it in the minutes properly that we're going to move that direction, I would think that motion should be voted on, and if it's passed, then the committee would have its charge.
If you don't withdraw your motion, the motion stands. You're not withdrawing it.
A second.
Any commentary, any discussion?
Well, my comment is that, again, we have a limited amount of time to read all of the material that we get and deal with the issues that we think are germane to our job, to spend our limited resources with regards to our committee resources, our energy on something that is going to cost us a bunch of money, say $50,000, $100,000 over the year. I would rather see an extra teacher having another class for that money, and that's exactly where the money is going to have to come from with the budgets the way they are. So I don't even want to spend the energy on it.
Any other comment there? By the way, is that a correct comment, that the money would come from the teacher's budget money? I thought that was a separate state allocation.
Well, this is general fund money we're talking about, right? Yeah. Whatever these costs are, they're operating fund dollars. So the primary competition you have is with the educational program, obviously.
Any other comments? We have a second motion.
You know, Elliot, this is kind of part of the question and not part of the question. I think we're spending a lot of time on this attorney thing, which my main concern from the very beginning of time I got on this committee was getting full disclosure
getting information, you know, to the committee on what's really going on in the bond program, and having some report of the the good and the bad outcomes of what's going on, some of the problems we have in our program. We were always sheltered from that information. I think that's what you're alluding to earlier,
right,
when you and I first got on the committee. I think that's more important for us, is to make sure that the people in management here are giving us, you know, unrestricted, full information of our good and bad accounts.
I think we've got that worked, and we're continuing to work on it.
I'm saying
the two ideas are not in competition.
Yeah, so I'm saying that if we got that information, this is really what we need. I'm not sure we need any legal advice, just to make comments on what's going on.
Any other discussion?
I think that since I was maybe not smart enough that I raised my hand to say I had been trained as an attorney, but I guarantee you would never want to hire me to oversee a bond thing. I think Marv's last comment really goes to the motion that was already defeated. The idea of having somebody, or investigating how you might have somebody who might be on call for a specific question, I think, as my grandmother said, that chicken soup, it couldn't hurt. So I think at that, I don't see what the harm would be in doing that, because you don't know when an issue may come up that may have legal ramifications, which if you don't have the training, you wouldn't know that the issue's there.
Okay, I want to point out we're ahead of schedule, but we're soon to lose that position. So
well, my counterpoint to that is I feel that if that arise, okay, came up with Bob and you, you know, having funny looks on your face, I would ask the Inspector General to give me a legal opinion on it, okay? And she would have to get the legal thing. So I feel very comfortable that now that the Inspector General's in place, that I would have enough research done on anything that I saw that I needed.
Okay? Anybody have a new comment to make, something new that we haven't discussed so far before we vote?
I'd like to vote.
So would I. So would you restate the...
No, don't make them do that.
Okay.
Do you have it down?
It's to have an advisor.
She has it down.
That was unfair.
Restate.
Oh, you want me to repeat it?
Yes.
I don't have all the wording.
Okay, the general...
I think I have it.
Okay.
Although I probably have a conflict of interest. It's a joke.
We got some.
Your legal humor. You made a motion to appoint a committee to review the needs, determine the appropriate outline, and consult attorneys for commentary and cost analysis on the use of attorney for this committee. Is that
all
right?
Okay, call the question. All those in favor of that position? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I got 7. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3. All those who are not voting? Abstentions? No. So we're going to proceed. May I suggest to you now that this is very proper for the advisory committee to undertake?
Be glad to undertake.
And may I suggest to the rest of you who are not members of the advisory committee, we could benefit from a couple of more people. We have room for them. So please contact me if you'd like to be all. No. Contact you directly.
Contact you. I need a list of the advisory committee members and their email address.
Somewhere buried in my paper.
We should all have a roster of everybody on the committee.
We should. Yeah. So in any event, I'll take care of that. Contact me, okay, if you would like to volunteer for that committee.
Elliot, before we go on, I'm looking at the agenda. I just have a question, because remember we would get a form at each meeting to see how we voted?
Yes, we did that this meeting.
And we were...
That lasted one meeting.
No, two,
that's
actually.
One of our
two, yeah. I was going to raise it, and then I thought, this is more paperwork.
Well, the point is, the reason I'm raising sure. it is because we had a reason for doing it.
You're right.
Again, it was a part of our accountability and all that good stuff. And we're not doing it.
I have been noticing you've been taking down names of people who voted which way.
Yes.
So that seems to be dealing with.
For some reason, we came up the one where we signed off.
Yeah, there
That's
was.
That's all I'm saying.
Let me offer you two thoughts on that. One, we've changed our own procedure so that we have the stat that Lillian is recording that. But two, that you specifically adopted a rule in your bylaws that creates a presumption of a yes vote unless you articulate a no. And you may not remember that, but in your in your bylaws, you created a rule that says, essentially, when you take a vote, instead of having to do an individual roll call, that he can say all in favor, and unless somebody clearly indicates, you know, with a raised hand or a no, that they're voting no or abstaining, that everybody's presumed to be a yes.
Well, I think that point that you're making is good, because it's clarifying what we're doing, which I thought we were doing the other, and maybe we did change it, and there are new people also.
Great. We got legal advice free.
I think the other thing that happened was that the staffing changed, and that the staff that was assigned wasn't as prepared to deal with committee meetings and recording votes and things as
I appreciate that. What I'm trying to say is, this is the kind of thing that happens in these group meetings: is personnel changes, things happen, and something drops out, and some people hear it, and some people don't, new people, and so. Going over it is a good thing. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, we're almost up to schedule, but before doing that, I ask people who want to volunteer for this committee to contact me. This is my name, okay? My email address is Elliot_Axelband, if my name is spelled, @rand.org. Repeating, my name is spelled here, Elliot, with an underscore between Elliot and Axelband, @rand.org. Chancellor.
Could you hold your name up again, please, sir?
Sure.
Thank
sure.
You.
Sure.
Before we proceed with the meeting, is there a place on the agenda where I will be able to make a couple of comments since I was late? Will there be room somewhere?
It's up to Elliot.
Before we adjourn, it would be normal.
Before, yeah.
I mean, about a previous agenda item.
Yes.
Being able to make comments before the meeting adjourns in general.
Just so.
Board member.
Sure. Okay. We can do that at the end, absolutely. But I'll try and keep us on schedule, too, so it's time for that.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And a special greeting to our newest members. I'm delighted to include some new folks as I continue to thank you for your service. And just witnessing that last 10-15 minutes is a reminder of the commitment you bring to wanting to do a good job. So I salute you for that as the year comes to a close. I've got two items here that I wanted to talk to you about. And maybe I'll try to frame my comments in a way that will still keep the continuing members engaged, but for the newer members, be more of an introductory lesson to the two topics. The issue of the building program review panel maybe can be best approached by saying that as I viewed last spring, summer, some of the external criticisms of the district and its bond program, and I'll just say parenthetically, they included a series of articles by the LA Times in February and March, some criticism in financial and performance reviews. I think we were at that point, as I like to say, starting an audit tsunami that carried through for the next 6 months. It seemed to me in that context that what was needed was an outside body to review certain aspects of the program which were sort of repeating offenses in the minds of our critics. And so in May, I put together a so-called building program review panel of 9 members, comprised largely of what I would call technical experts, folks who've made their living in reviewing the technical apparatus and the construction schematics of large-scale construction projects. They were heads of, they are heads of architectural firms. They run programs for the city and the county. The Caltech Facilities Director is on our program. A lot of Navy influence, and if you know the construction industry, you know that the Navy influence is pretty comprehensive. And to that group, I issued a charge. Continuing members have seen it many times. I've described it many times. And new members, if it wasn't in your orientation packet, I'll be looking at Tom to be sure you get a copy of it. That charge included several areas of what I felt were some of the primary issues. The word afflicting ran through my mind, concerning the board program. And among the key elements of that charge were aspects of centralization, decentralization. Because going back to 2001, the Board of Trustees decided that the program, like much of its operation, would be built on a decentralized model. So I'm sure you know by now our colleges have unusual authority in running their specific projects. It talked about the charge did the role of faculty in the extent to which we permit faculty, indeed we encourage faculty historically, to be involved in a wide-ranging aspect of decision making. It looked at some of the technical things like soft and hard costs. It looked at the relationships between the president, the construction program manager, and the project manager. And it looked at ethics. There's some of the conditions that I asked them to review. Through the generosity of the LA Chamber of Commerce, I tip my hat to David and Gary Tobin. We were provided graciously meeting rooms over the last 6 months. It was a project led by John Dacey. He was the chair of this panel. John has a longstanding history with LAUSD as their attorney, speaking of attorneys. The project has come to a completion. This week, actually last week, the panel's report was finalized. It's being edited and printed this week. And I will issue it to you, as I will issue it to a few other key constituents, my cabinet, the bond steering committee, and the board of trustees, during the first week of January. My tentative schedule is to present those recommendations to the board of trustees on January 25th at its meeting of the Capital Construction Committee. It'll be good reading. It's a great report. I think the expertise, the dependence this group enjoyed, those have paid rich dividends in terms of the specificity, the clarity. I know I'm being unfair, kind of seducing you into, well, was he going to tell us or not? But it's a bold report that tells the truth as they see it. So I think you'll find when you read it that issues of sacred cows, issues of history fell to the side. Nine experts came together who know construction, who frankly know the way politics of institutions can work, and they've given us, I think, a great report. So the fact that I included you in that group just now should signal to you, relative to an earlier question that Bob raised, are we getting the data? The short list I just outlined, the board, you, the bond steering committee, and my cabinet, the first rush of dissemination, I hope signals to you how important I think your opinions are. So I think you'll find, by the way, and I'll say this to the board clearly, in fact, I've already said it to the president of the board, that I cannot imagine, but once you've read the report and seen the recommendations, that some of the structure of your future agenda will be driven by some of the content of that report. But suffice it to say, it's done. One man's opinion, I think it's a strong report. And it includes, and this is a good transition to the second item here, it includes both, I think, some very insightful comments about needs for technical changes in the program, mirroring, frankly, some of the recommendations in that category that Christine Mares has recommended in some of the reports. But it also looks at some of the governance aspects. And no one's done that yet. All the reports I've read, I've seen really a dearth of reports and summaries that go beyond the technical improvements to the structure of things. And I think you'll see in this report some, I think, interesting ideas that are going to invite some policy considerations by the board. So you have my pledge. You'll have that report first week in January. And you can, you and I and Nancy and Tom, as we structure, you know, continuing agendas, you know, may want to consider that. The second item asks me to talk to you about the bond program moratorium.
Dana, can I ask one question?
Sure.
I know we're going to have a chance to read it, so I can hold my question, but I'm just wondering, do they have? Are there going to be any recommendations that they will deliver that will be part of the report that are relative to us directly in the sense of our own duties and
yes.
ways that we could better
yes.
discharge those duties and interact with you and the Board of Trustees and that sort of thing?
Let me say the DCOC is included in the project in the report. Yes.
Okay. Look forward to that. Thank you.
Sorry.
I was ringing a phone and by these wonderful stories. I spoke yesterday about what I'm going to talk to you about now with the Pierce College faculty. And as I was speaking, the phone of the faculty guild president went off, like mine did. And it took me back to a very amusing moment in Illinois politics, of all things. Does the name Ron Blagoy mention me anything? I was in Springfield, Illinois, the state capital, once, preparing to give testimony to a state budget committee, a Senate budget committee. I was asked to comment on a budget request being advanced by the state community colleges. And ahead of me was Ron Blagojevich's chief financial officer, a guy named John Filan. I don't know what you know about Illinois politics.
That's a bag man, isn't it?
It's a contact sport in Illinois politics. And so Mr. Filan's ahead of me making this budget presentation on behalf of Mr. Blagojevich, and his phone goes off. Imagine this absolutely crowded hearing room. I mean, people, SRO, standing room only. So he takes the phone out of his pocket, and he takes the call. He's at the podium, and he takes the call. It's from his daughter. And they're arguing over, the ladies will appreciate this, dress size. His daughter had been birthday shopping for him for his wife. So in the midst of, you know, all these discussions about budget, he has the audacity in a Senate budget committee to take this call. And so I thank the board, the guild president, yes, for not taking the call while I was speaking. But it just kind of drew me back as this did. Anyway, let me say a few things about the bond program moratorium. The history of the program has, as you know, received some attention in recent times that is unparalleled in terms of the investigatory nature of that review. And it certainly goes without saying that we have had great progress with this program in terms of the number of things we've already done that, mirroring some of Richard's comments earlier, we regret, as Colby King, our media consultant, we agree, we regret that not enough attention has been given publicly to the wonderful changes we've made to the complexion of our 9 college district. We have glorious facilities working well, contributing to teaching and learning. I mean, just some wonderful things are happening with these programs in spite of some of the issues that were discovered and most of which I think have continued to address. However, in recent times, as I think you are well aware, the state budget has taken a dramatic turn for the worse, not just in our sector, but in the CSU sector and in the UC system sector. And you heard just this week
that yet another cut would be imposed on the community colleges approaching $100 million. It will take our reduction from what had been a $28 million cut this year to $40 this year. So our revenues continue to shrink. Worse, to digress a moment longer on budget, even with the governor's proposed tax initiative of, what is he saying, $7 billion revenue, he himself has said that there would remain a gap of $6 to $8 million, even with the passage of the initiative in FY13. So the view of the state as a reliable financial partner is just not a view I would encourage any of you to hold if you care for the institution like I do, and I know that that's the case with you, you wouldn't be serving in this voluntary capacity. So initially it was this financial structure back in August, September, following the receipt of the State Comptroller's Office audit, that caused me to reflect on one particular aspect of the audit, which was deeply troubling to me. And that was their speculation that the district did not have sufficient M&O dollars, maintenance and operation dollars, to fund the program if it were built out as currently planned. So putting it simply again for new members, I don't want to be too technical here. If one were to go back, the project list that began with the first passage of the first bond in 01 through the second and the third, during which time faculty and others developed their project lists, coordinating educational plans, facilities master plans, each college has its own future captured in those plans. What perhaps the state controller speculated wasn't done sufficiently well was a corresponding planning, corresponding planful attitude about the dollars that would be required as we gin up our fiscal plan by 60%. What wasn't done, he speculated, as carefully as it might have been, was the true consideration of the energy savings that we would have with our commitment to all kinds of sustainability devices. What wasn't considered in his mind was whether or not going forward we had carefully considered the way in which these new costs would affect our budget given the state of the economy. And of course, as the office that issues the quarterly revenue reports, his opinion's not chopped liver in my mind. This is an office that knows revenue. So that caused me at the time then, in the midst of this context, to call for what was then a 30-day moratorium to begin to review the M&O questions. That led to the issuance of a second moratorium through this past Wednesday, December 14th. And this past Wednesday, I think you have the report I gave to the board. This past Wednesday, you can see that I went forward with the board fairly aggressively, saying that we needed a full year to review not only the M&O issues, which by some counts could amount to a $19 million a year increase, but also, and the second point is something Tom has offered some particular leadership on, is how do we evaluate the whole question of space utilization? You know, it's more now than the typical standard. How well are you using your building over the life of the day? You know, are you catering to the needs of faculty who like to teach between 10 and noon and the rest of the day the building is empty? Or are you catering to student needs? That's sort of the threshold space question. But beyond that, above that, what have you done to assess the way in which the building plan you're considering relates to the shortfalls in enrollment that we've experienced so far, capping enrollment, the state lowering our workload reduction, lowering our capacity to fund the FTEs we generate? Have you thought about that, was the implied question that we began to ask. And those are two pretty big questions, let alone, and Tom and I have had some discussions on this, I've actually talked to a space consultant personally. There's also the question of to what degree we can afford the staff to clean these buildings, and also by that standard, how can we be sure that they are trained well to be efficient workers? So I had a wonderful leadership class at Harvard years ago, and the six-week program. It was the best professional development program I ever had. And the thing I remember most about the program was the fellow who taught a class in leadership. And one day he brought in this huge rainbow trout. And he threw it on the table and made us all come up and look at it. And if you know that fish, it's filled with spots. And he said the problem solving was about just keeping that fish moving, turning it over, turning it over, turning it over, and finding new relationships among the dots. And I think of that metaphor when I think about the issue I just described. That spatial utilization started out as this narrow focus, and then it became this, and then it became this. Well, if these two things weren't enough, two things again, being the M&O capability and the space utilization issue, we discovered also, through new information provided to this group and others, the Build LACCD dashboard reports show us that we're on a track to spend far more money than we have if we build out the Build program as it is now constituted. And while that number, I am assured by Lloyd Silberstein, is going to go up and down, in fact, it did the last 2 months. From, I think,
145 to 120.
Yeah, it was a $20-30 million fluctuation. John Harlow from LACCD. We know that there will continue to be adjustments as that program kind of settles out. So if you've been able to track all this, here are the things staring me in the face. Dollars for M&O. For the characteristics I described, proper use of space, so they don't criticize us later for saying you can't, you know, don't listen to Kevin Costner and build it and they will come, you know, if you saw that movie, okay? And thirdly, what about the bond program budget? Those are the things out there that caused me, as you saw here, to say, let's have a pause. Let's have a pause to recalibrate. Let's take some time to ask our colleges to review the projects they have engaged for future and to see how those projects might be prioritized, altered, et cetera.
What about projections of the operating budget in the state? Is that included in the three categories that you mentioned?
Well, one thing that I said to the board, which is not, I'll be the first to say that I don't have a 100% response from the board on the positive side on this. The primary reason I recommended November was that it gives us a period in which the maximum financial information is available to us. Four quarterly revenue reports, the governor's budget policy known on July 1 for FY13, and the tax initiative. So it's very conservative, I know that, and frankly I'm not sure that the board we'll be able to sustain that period of time given the pressures on it from various stakeholder groups. But in my mind, from a financial perspective, I want as much information as I can have in advising the board, and that window gives me those three variables, the ones I just described. So the revenue reports, the state budget, and the tax initiative. So it's there. You know, we all know that a lot of the budget development in this state and other states where I've had familiarity with that, it's all sort of a courting, dating, you know, posturing system. So what the governor said this week about the $6 billion shortfall, even with a successful tax, you know, that's going to go through a lot of iterations. People whisper in my ear, you know, the economy's improving, Dan, your numbers are too dark. And there are signs, both nationally and in California, I'm told, that could lead one to believe that the revenue picture might improve, if not dramatically, at least somewhat. Yeah.
Is there an assumption going forward that the student population that gets supported by the state and various other sources is going to have to shrink?
Well, we're certainly planning in that way. I think in the way that this year we had to shrink our enrollment because we had a 6.5% reduction. We see what's on the writing on the wall for next year, as I described it. The totality of the reductions to the three sectors is now in excess of $1 billion in the last biennium. So I was actually had Jack Scott, the head of the system, is in town today. He's speaking with Lyle Opinion about the new Student Success Task Force report. And we were laughing at our agreement over the fact that these variations on Occupy LA, Occupy such and such, that have spread to education. I'm sure you've read where there have been student occupations. And we agree that, you know, we're all for free assembly and free speech, but they're in the wrong city. You know, the city they should be in is where?
Sacramento.
Right, so the idea of galvanizing student support, little political statement here. You can put this in the minutes, Tom. I think that the capability of the students to get the governor's attention, to get legislators' attention on this, has not been fully tapped. Indeed, if you've been following some of these student demonstrations, what I found was odd was sort of the partner side of the protest equation. Because when you demonstrate, you usually have a demand. And if you watch the ones that were done in various cities in California, the first piece was there, but the second piece was either absent or so vague that it was meaningless. So I think, you know, we can never underestimate the importance of activism, certainly in a state with our activist history. But I think we're a long ways from galvanizing the student and business support, frankly, that we need to turn this around. So, long answer to the question, yes, Dan, I think that we will have a continued reduction in service. And I think that we will find that certainly for the next year and maybe two, even with an economic upturn, that the promises made by community colleges up and down the state through the Clark Kerr Master Plan about service to all who feel they can benefit, just not a promise we're going to be able to keep. So coming back to this then, what's being organized now is a three-month period. I've said to the board that rather than debate the November 1st date, let us engage then. We're going to engage a study, really. These three areas that I mentioned, we're going to additionally work with presidents and project managers on the campuses to review projects, to create new priorities, to see whether or not adjustments are needed and how long that would take. At the same time, we have made a commitment to advance projects that have currently been engaged. So if you're a campus with a construction project underway, it's going to continue. But if you haven't done that, and thus I think it's on page one, some of the categories you can get yourself, we feel that we ought to be more conservative with projects that haven't been engaged. We will likely, Lloyd and I and Tom, I think, agree that there are likely going to be some projects that by necessity we will review and release. But the bulk of the program, we feel it's important to take another look at. So I think that the thing that I've tried to communicate to the faculty groups that I'm speaking with is that a couple of important points are relevant here. One is that I want, Tom wants, Lloyd wants to build out as much of this program as we can. We're not trying to be Scrooge here. We're trying to move forward with as much as we can. But we want to be sure that we don't further compromise our operational budget pictures on the campuses by overspending and causing them even further angst as they try to manage their budgets. I think the second thing is that, though this was my decision earlier on, I'm trying to assure people that it's not an imperial decision. What I mean by that is that we know in the climate we're in, with everyone struggling for resources, that there must be participatory activity here. It's advisory, but part of the process that we'll engage, actually it's being engaged this month through the next couple of months, will include some of the key constituent groups within the district. And Tom and Lloyd and I will welcome that feedback as we proceed. Why don't I pause there? Tom, if you have any comments, please jump in, and then we can maybe together try to field some questions here.
Yeah, so as we go forward, there are, and it's like the Chancellor said, there are projects that will have to continue to move forward. We have 40-some projects in construction. Those aren't subject to the moratorium. They're going to continue. They're going to keep moving. We have to take a strong look at, what's it doing to our operational budget as we move forward with other projects. So it's really taking that piece and just dissecting it a little, coming up with some kind of analysis. And there will be projects that will move off the moratorium list as we move forward. Not everything's going to be held up for that period of time. An example, down at Southwest, we have a pump house, and that pump house is on the moratorium list. But in order to open the Middle College High School, we've got to go ahead and build that pump house, or we're not going to have any water pressure for the fire alarm system, or the sprinkler system. So there's things that logically that have gotten on the list because they show us not started or in the beginning stages, but they need to continue. Another example is if we have a project that we've got a building that's just really eating up a lot of our cost with maintenance and energy, and we're putting a renovation or a different building up to replace it, those buildings themselves are going to be money that's going to be saved for the district rather than an additional expense. But when we started on this project in 2001 through 2010, we started on it with the idea that our enrollment was going to continue to grow over that period of time. And that's the way we built our whole plan. It's the old Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. But the revenue hasn't come with it to support that and sustain that. So we have to really look at that, because you can go broke because you don't have enough money to pay your bills. So we have to really watch that as, the funds become less and less from the state's perspective. And the same money that we use to maintain the buildings is the same money that we use to supply teachers for the buildings. So it's competing, if we have to put in another person to maintain the building, where's that money come from? There's not a magic pool of money out there that makes up the difference, so you've got to figure out, okay, can we maintain what we have, or is there areas where we've overbuilt that maybe we can move some of these programs and others and use the funding to produce buildings that are really going to benefit us in the long run.
Are the students there if the money was there? I mean, is the student population growing the way we thought it is? So if there was cash. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I could ask Nabil to expand on that from one college's perspective.
Yeah, this is a very emotional subject for us on campus. I'm sure it is for everybody. But in my office, I sit with my shades open. I look straight out on the main mall for the campus, and I see the students. And they really don't spend enough time in class, because even the students we have don't have enough classes to go to. We know how many people we turn away. We can't really reject anybody. They get admitted to the college but never sign up for a class. There's huge demand system-wide. It's exacerbated by the absence of spaces at the Cal States and the UCs. So some are never leaving the community college. They continue to take classes to maintain their college-going profile. Others are coming back to us because they can't get enough classes, or they can't get in at all. It's really a sad story. But ultimately, there's more demand now than I think there really ever has been on the community colleges right when we're turning students away.
If I may suggest, we now get to the operating part of the meeting, where Tom is going to present the budget status, the thing we're supposed to be watching, the thing where we have improved tools that I hope you'll point out as part of your presentation. And so unless anybody has a bond burner...
I think I may. I have some questions about the counter to the conversation that we've entered into so far, and that's, what are the costs of placing these projects in moratorium? And we have not, I think the committee would do well to have a list of all of the projects by name, so they can compare them to the plan book, so we know which projects are in moratorium and which are not. We have totals But as well, I would like to see information on what the effects would be on any of these projects being held off for a period of time. And if they're canceled, we know what the effect is. They're not going to happen. But those projects that are being held in moratorium at different stages may have different types of costs that would apply to them. Changes in material pricing, the district keeps estimates on. You have some that are listed, and I wasn't sure from this, in stage number five, in bid awards, does that mean that you've received bids from contractors?
It means that some of them are in that phase.
So if you cancel or hold those in moratorium, some contractors will back out of their bid prices, and it very well could change. Maybe it goes down, but maybe it goes up if you have to rebid the project because it's been held back. And I know those aren't necessarily decisions in the process of making a decision to go forward on a project at all, but it is a decision that, or a cost matter that this committee should have in front of it so that they can assess what the sense is of holding projects in moratorium and how long and what effect it will have financially on the cost of building those projects.
This is what exactly happened at LACC. Okay, the moratorium forced, you know, the administration and the project team to look at that in more detail with regards to the covenant of student space, you know, ratios, you know, the budget to build out the stuff, and then the operating budget, you know, to operate them after. And there's a whole range of decisions to be made, okay? You can stop a project, you know, in the middle, it's going to cost you a lot of money. If you stop it at a specific phase, you know, and it may cost you money, but at least you finish the phase, okay, like getting it into DSA, okay? And, you know, those kinds of decisions, I believe you're in the process of evaluating, and you'll make those decisions as to when you're going to stop it or if you're going to continue it.
If I could just jump in here and say, we have asked each of the colleges to come back with some information on that by the middle of January, so by the end of January we can vet some of this. You know, and that's the part of the process. So we're not trying to delay anything any longer than it has to. You know, the reality is we want to do what's right. We still are, you know, are planning on, you know, spending the money that's there.
This goes nowhere to any negative about what you're having to go through, because I mean this is forced upon the community college district. But what I'm saying is this committee should have that kind of information and a detailed list of each project and an assumption of what those kinds of costs would be. Either we assume that there will be no added cost to holding that project up for a period of time, or there may be an increase. I mean, it may be that as simple as using that language, but this committee should have that kind of information.
I see Tom has noted that, and as we go through the agenda development process, if we're ready, our next meeting would be
28th, I think, or 24th.
24th of March. February.
There's another concern.
We'll make that an agenda item for that.
Another concern of one of our members of our Citizens Oversight Committee at the school was in the student space ratio, okay, you have a whole potpourri of ratios on the nine campuses. Is there going to be any plan to reallocate construction costs based on that, the normalization of the student space? Okay.
This is one of the policy questions the board will have to address.
Okay, because that certainly, you know, if I was running the ship, you know, I'd say, well, I'm going to have to meet that covenant, okay, on the, you know, number of students per square foot.
Yeah, and by some standards, there are some colleges with remaining projects which are overbuilt now.
Right.
They're overbuilt now.
Well, I don't think you'll tear down the building.
No, I know what I'm saying.
But you might rent
them
out.
I know he wants to continue here. So.
But I just have one question that when you were in the brief, is that the legal ramifications of this, that goes back. I understand what you have to do and the monies and what's lost and gained, but given what might take place on one campus or another are in competition with each other in monies. Are there any legal ramifications with bond money as how you can, and you don't have to go into it now, but it made me think, does bond money, can that be held indefinitely?
Yes, the district's ability to issue and sell bonds is ongoing. So we don't have to work, what the voters approved remains available to us. That's why I'm saying, calling this a pause.
But do you take, can you take from one college to another?
Fungibility is what she's asking about.
No. We have monies, I mean. We have a series of project lists that we are following. And I think our first effort, as was noted, is to have the colleges talk back to us on the projects they have. Folks, I'm going to need to step to another commitment, but I wanted to thank you again for your work with this group and wish each of you warmly a very happy holiday. Be safe.
Thank you. Thanks for your comments. Emil, you had 15 seconds worth. Yeah. Tom, you're next. Adriana, you had a list to hand out. You might explain that between the Beal's comment and Tom's report.
Okay. Just really very briefly, certainly within our internal conversations, I've made strong arguments about wanting to exchange really old temporary space with new modern space. But the reality is we really have to be very careful operationally to be able to pay for the lights to be on in the facilities we have right now. So much as I'm delighted to hear you really advocating for completing the program, I want to give this to you from the perspective of a college president. Building everything as soon as possible may not be supportable. Now, I will have my battles on campus, but we probably can't afford everything very quickly until the students start coming back, until the state starts paying us to support more students. So it's a very difficult balance, and bitter pill as it may be, we really do have to do these studies and take advantage of some very careful thinking.
Thank you. Adriana, could you explain the form you're going to hand out?
Sure. Earlier you asked for a roster with your names and the like. So we have the start of it, but we do need for you to verify name and phone number, email address, and I've already noted a couple of changes or errors. So we're just going to circulate
Please look at this and make sure you're represented accurately. Tom?
Okay. So let me try and go through this section as quickly as possible, because I know that we'll be getting close to the 2 o'clock hour, and there are a few things that were sent to you ahead of time, and this is part of trying to improve our transparency, and I know it's a large volume, but I promise I won't send you that large volume every time. You know, it's kind of a snapshot, so that a lot of this stuff is going to be posted on the internet so you can get to it anytime and get to the latest version of it whenever it's there. But I think it's important that you have at least a discussion down the road about each of these to see if it's given you the information you need. Because it's very important that we want to make sure that everybody understands that we're trying to be as transparent as we can be with everything that we have. And if there's something that you're seeing that's not there or you don't see that you want, you know, let me know. And you can let us know in a variety of ways. Lillian's going to be coordinating all the minutes and stuff. You can email her. You can email me directly. You can get it to Elliot, or you can get it to Nancy, or you can get it to the subcommittee, however you want to. You know, but the first thing that I sent to you and is this nice little color diagram. And what it does is there's a key at the bottom, and it gives you a snapshot of where we're at on the different projects, where we're at in relationship to the schedule of the project, and whether we're behind or ahead of schedule, what phase the project's in. It's got a lot of information embedded in this, and we've done that for each of the colleges has a separate page, and this will be something that you will be seeing posted on the website also. And we'll try and keep this up to date on a monthly basis as we go through. And this information is coming from the colleges. Each of the CPM directors will be submitting that information to us, and we will update it as we go. And so if you haven't seen that, we couldn't actually incorporated into the dashboard report because it's a different template. But we wanted to provide this as an additional bit of information. I know that's one thing that a lot of people have asked for. Okay, a second thing that we did, and you'll see a document like this. We went to the board. One of the biggest criticisms that we've had as a district, and one of the biggest things that's been asked for time after time after time, is what is the budget for the project? And the answer to that was we allocated the money to the colleges, and they set the money for the projects, and they were able to add to it as they needed, and we didn't control that. It was something that was controlled at the campus level. Now, due to all the questions that we were getting and some of the comments that we were getting, we've now gone through and set the budgets at the project level. We did this in August. We went through with all the colleges, and now each project has a budget that we can measure it against, which wasn't there before. So that's one of the frustrations that a lot of people had. Well, how do you know if you're over budget? Well, we weren't over the allocation that was given to the college. If you're not over that allocation, you weren't technically over budget. But now what we've done is we've set it at the project level. That's what this document does. It gives you what projects are out there, how much money's on there, and now we will be reporting the variances to those that are major variances to this committee. So you'll be able to see when we have large change orders and stuff going forward.
This is where the $140 million overrun would tie to? Or $110 million overrun there?
Well, that actually comes to our forecasting. And that's the other thing that I wanted to talk about.
So this is only committed projects?
That's the projects. That's how we set up our budgets now. We locked in the money at the project level. Now we know what the project budgets are. Okay, this document is your dashboard. The dashboard is an ongoing look at where we're at month to month in those. And when we say projected, we started keeping track of a forecast of what each project is going to come in at and what they're projecting we're going to come in at. So now we have a tool that we can go back and we can make adjustments so that we don't go over budget.
But that's every project in the master plan, everything that the wish list. If we built
everything on the wish list, because there were projects on the wish list that probably wouldn't be funded because of our wish list was bigger.
No, that's wrong word. Everything that we thought we were committing to, notwithstanding this moratorium, is now either already spent, it's in design, it's under construction, or there is a budget for it. And if you add those all up, we're $110 million over?
Well, if we were to spend at that rate,
okay,
and continue spending at what we forecast, we would be, at this point, in the October dashboard.
$145 million.
Was it October? Was it $145?
According to this last...
That was the budget. That's when we started. Now I think the number for this month was $120 million. Because we've made some adjustments, and we will continue to make adjustments. Some of them will take policy changes, and the board may have to weigh in on those policy changes. But we will get the budget in line. We won't overspend the budget. That's the benefit of having a forecast, because it says, okay, it's just like, you have your checkbook at home. You say, I want all these things. Well, you look at your checkbook, there's only so much money in the checkbook. You got to make decisions on which ones you're going to move forward with.
We're having good discussions that was had throughout the meeting. I would entertain a motion to extend our closing time 15 minutes, okay, so that we can continue and get the quality report that will be provided.
I won't be able to stay, but I've certainly voted for it.
I still move.
Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? Pretty clear. All in favor say aye. Aye. Raise your hands, rather. All opposed? Okay, it passes. Please, now take some more time. While he's doing that, let me point out how you can find out now where some problems may exist. Okay, problems, elements of problem discovery in construction and other kinds of projects are things like we're behind schedule. Okay, we had a schedule and we're not on it. So if you take a look at the first page, and if you take a look at item 1C115, take a look at 1C115, then go to the schedule bars on the right. Okay, the red bar is actuals. Okay, you will notice we're at least a 1 month behind on that project. We have not pierced to the current activity line. So people concerned with that project, and every college representative should be concerned with their college, can spot when things are behind schedule by looking at this summary data. The other thing to be concerned about is cost. So let me go to Western Lake College, but let me announce in advance that this data is not current. But if it were current, it would have, the first time I saw it, it did actually cause me great concern. And I'm going now to page 9 of 10. Go to page 9 of 10 and look at the budget variance. Okay, are we spending as we plan to spend? Look at those red numbers. The minus $5 million is a 40% budget variance to keep you awake at night. And there are other variances, but there's a positive variance, too, of $7 million. That's the black variance. It turns out if you go to the current plans, which are reflected in this book, Attachment B, you find out that the program for the positive variance is being canceled, and its money is going into the program, which is over budget. So this gives you cause to look into it. It looking into a little more sees that there's a corrective action on the way. I'm not saying we're perfect. I'm saying please look at your school, okay, and interact with the school board that you're on. And this gives you first order schedule and budget indications. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, actually, this is really true because, you know, that building is 2 months behind schedule. You know, as reported,
well,
it's under watch, and we're monitoring that contractor.
Right. We're going to try and get you the information as quickly as possible. If you go to the website, you'll get it faster than you will in hard copy.
Well, I get it from the school.
Okay, that's good.
So I'm watching out for LACC.
That's good. And you should. And that's one of the things coming forward in this year that we need to, and the subcommittee will be involved in, is putting together what the report looks like that each college is going to present. Because we haven't done that yet, and that's one of the things that we said that
but,
we would do.
But, you know, these things have a trickle effect. The two-month delay there will not make that building available for the fall,
right. Okay,
which is going to cause other delays because of that. So they're trying to accelerate it so that building can be available for the fall. It was planned to be available by fall.
So these reports are all made for you to look at. Once you get used to using them, you know, it's not going to be a bunch of new data coming at you. It'll be just you'll be able to see when things are changing.
Do you feel you yourself, you have more timely, better information than you had 6 months ago?
6 months ago, we were putting together all this different ideas of what this would look like. So the answer to that is absolutely, because now we're starting to get the information in a usable format. You know, and we had to go through and we had to put budgets together because we didn't have budgets for projects. What we had was budgets for colleges, but you know there was no set budget, so there was nothing to compare. Richard brought up the idea, well, here's this strategic plan for LAUSD, you know, where is something like that you have? Well, we had master plans, but we didn't have a master budget plan, you know, so that caused us to take a look at what we were doing and say, yes, we need to do something different, and we need to put this together. So, you know, a lot of this stuff is driven by things that you guys have suggested, but it's also driven by things that other people have suggested too. You know, but they just seem to culminate into certain things. So now what I need from you is some feedback on some of this stuff. If you see that it's not meeting the needs that you have, and any additional things that you need us to put together for you. Because we've moved from the idea of reporting history into reporting, you know, what we're doing in the future, so forecasting and moving forward so we can have a better idea of where we are going to be you know, and keeping things on track.
I think something, excuse me for interrupting again, what would be really helpful for me now, I'm going to go through all this stuff, and it's a huge amount of stuff to understand, but at future meetings, if we spend more time with you, having you go through those projects that you think have got significant problems, and we do it campus by campus and project by project. I mean, it gets.
We have a plan to do it. You are not the meetings. We pass motions that actually set up such a framework where we go through campus by campus, project by project, and also where we alert things. What are your top five problems, and what are you doing about them? So that's all part of motions we have passed. Yes, we should spend more time.
Yeah, you always get shortchanged because you're at the end, and you're.
No, it's because so many people ask questions.
I know. But you're kind of the whole point now.
Yes.
Okay. Can I just get one thing?
You're right. Sure.
Marv, you pointed this out very well, knowing the way you did that. But I think it would really be great if all the ones that show some concern had a footnote with maybe a little abstract of problem and solution.
Why don't the two of you join the special committee, because we're going to work on that, making these reports even better.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, that's okay.
But I'm saying it would be really helpful said was great.
No, we're going to continue to work and develop. This has been great progress. More progress is possible, and we're going to work together to make that happen.
I think this is fantastic, by the way. Absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
With that, I got to run.
One for me.
There's a couple other little things.
Well, by the way, the questions were good. We had great interaction at this meeting. I just can't resist making comments like that.
Before you get out of here, I just want to tell you, one of the things that came out of our meeting with the president of the board and leadership here was that, you know, the ask about people attending board meetings. And so we put together a form that if anybody wants to sign up so that you know when the board meetings are, and then we'll let you know the information, and then if anybody wants to attend the board trustee meetings that are held, you know, that way
people are leaving some map to distribute by email.
Yes, we can do that.
That would be
so
fantastic.
I just want you to know that was an ask, and now we have a form, and you know, it doesn't have to be everybody going to the same meeting, but if we can spread it out, then this group of 17, and we have a couple going to each meeting, then you get some firsthand knowledge coming back to them. So,
and I agree, we have to lengthen the time, and we're trying to work at that, all of us, for your reporting, and are working with the advisory committee for suggestions that might improve our reporting. Now, I think we finished our formal business. Are there any comments? Eva, I know that you wanted to say something.
I did have one other thing.
Sorry.
And it speaks to good news, bad news.
Oh, good. I'd like to hear it.
So, I just wanted to bring you up to date. We've had some things happen in our program where we had Diffenbaugh, which was a contractor that went default. We're just about worked through that process. We still have one project at Pierce that we're working through. We had another contractor that walked away, SMC, and it's Mission and Valley, and we're in the process of working on with the sureties on that and the takeover agreements. UCCI at East LA, that one, the surety took over that, and I think that project's complete now. We have some ongoing hearings and stuff that we're working on. Gateway, FDR, and Turner were three letters that I sent out. Turner has decided to leave the program, and there'll be a transition. They were at West LA, and so that CPM firm will walk away from the program at the end of January. And Gateway and FTR, we've had hearings with FTR, and I think, Bob, you attended some of those. We're still in that process. We're not done. And Gateway, we're still in the process. We're not done. So those are all some things that are going on in the program. In the meantime, I had a list here, and here it is. Some good news. City College recently delivered projects, Jefferson Hall, Life Science Building renovation, Chemistry Building. Those are all projects that are finishing up.
East LA, the E3, E5 replacement buildings finishing, performing arts, performing and fine arts complex is finishing, student services E1 is finishing, administration building is finishing, Mission College consumer studies is finishing up, land acquisition at Hubbard Street for swing space, that's finished, and we're getting ready to do some work on that. Pierce, phase one of faculty offices replastering is done. Trade Tech construction technology boiler retrofit is done. West LA grandstands and restrooms finishing up, and so is the second access road. So we've been very active on finishing a lot of these projects up. And if you guys have specific questions, I'll try and get that information for you.
I have one question relative to during this moratorium period, and I'm kind of relating that period of time with the hearings I listened to the other day. Are you going to take some time during that period of kind of when things, you've got everything on hold, to take a look at your systems and your procedures, your checks and balances on exactly the type of things that cause that kind of problem that I sat through?
The stuff with the FDR stuff that we're talking about were 2008, so we've spent a lot of time already looking at our systems.
Okay.
So almost everything that you're hearing about was stuff that took place 3 years ago.
Right.
So it's new news to some people, but yeah, it's old news to the program.
Well, when I sat through, I wasn't really as concerned about that actual issue itself. I was looking at the procedures and the organization and the culture that allowed it to happen. And I think the thing that I'd like to hear is that something's been learned from this, and that you understand how the problem occurred, who signed off on the project, and all that sort of thing, and how the procedures now are better and different, that will not allow that to happen again. And the second part is there a second effort, maybe by the IG, to look for other similar types of problems that may have slipped underneath the carpet?
I think these were all, some of these started out as whistleblower items.
Right.
We do have a whistleblower program in place, and anybody can pick up the phone and call the whistleblower hotline, so we do have an opportunity that people don't have to feel like they can't speak out now.
I know.
So that's really improved that ability for the transparency also, because now if there's issues like that, there's an avenue for it to go through.
Well, I heard, just following up on that, if you don't mind, just capitalize this for a second.
This
could be real quick. Yes, and I also heard that the whistleblower program is really overwhelmed with whistleblower issues, and that there's a need to do some sort of prioritizing on the whistleblower issues and which ones seem to be important to follow and which are not. And I think that's got some concern to me that, maybe there's more whistleblower problems than the IG is staffed and capable of handling. It's just a question.
Well, is there any reason why?
Has he finished?
Yes. He's finished with his questions. He's asked for an answer, and then I'll recognize you because I know you've been very patient in trying to make your comment.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, the question he asked you is the IG adequately staffed?
I'm not in a position to answer that because I don't see the calls that come in, so that would be a question we'd have to ask.
You can call Christine directly.
Okay.
Your comment, please.
No, you're ahead of me.
You raised your hand about 20 minutes ago.
The meeting minutes from 10:28, I was in attendance at that time, and the only reason I'm pointing that up is to let you know just how dedicated I am. I was in attendance on that date. Number two, I noticed that some young man said that he arrived at 12:18. If you're going to indicate what time I arrived, I have a good excuse, but it would take too long for me to explain it. And if you want to call me, I will give you my dear friend didn't pick me up. They'd had to drive from the valley. And the last point, number three, I was going to ask for a ride home, but my friend is here, so I don't have to ask for a ride home, and I live in South Central Los Angeles. Thank you.
Any other comments? We finished our official business.
Well, go ahead.
Well, we have 3 minutes.
I actually wanted to make some remarks about the questions that Bob was asking, specifically regarding learnings from the Inspector General's investigation. Tom just announced that the CPM at West LA is walking away from the project. It's through mutual agreement. So you might imagine that West will be looking at selecting a new CPM. Mm-hmm. I am comforted by the fact that there's already a heightened level of alertness and some very clear recommendations on how to improve the process over the last time that there was a selection of that nature at West and presumably everywhere else, of course. Mm-hmm. So there has been a lot of learning, not just a recognition of problems and improvements in process. You might imagine working at West under these circumstances. I'm very concerned about that. And the other remark I wanted to make is, although the moratorium may stop us from starting new projects or stop projects at a natural next step and not start the next step, there's plenty going on. Even then, there's a lot of construction going on. Projects are not being stopped in mid-course. We have 2 four-story buildings that are on the verge of opening up. We're minutes away, mm-hmm. a large number of minutes. But I'm still hoping that we will occupy them for spring semester. And so there's almost a frenetic sense of work on campus. Certainly in West, at West, and I expect at the other colleges. So please, I just want to assure you that the moratorium doesn't mean things come to a screeching halt.
Shouldn't the IG give a report at every meeting?
She generally does. But she was here, but with all the potential agenda items we had, we concluded, the Chancellor, myself, Nancy, and Adriana, I think, were the committee at that time, and Thomas. Our conclusion was that this was the best thing to bring forward. But this is, I think, perhaps the first such meeting where she has not reported. It's a standard agenda item, but it wasn't for this meeting.
And we'll put her on the agenda for next time. We had to get through the annual report. We're 6 months behind already on getting that out. So, we need to get that finished.
I will.
If I can just respond.
I will entertain a motion to adjourn because we have less than a minute left. It's either adjourn or extend the meeting. So anybody make a motion if they want?
Adjourn.
I'll ask you a question.
Okay. Second. I hope no discussion at this point.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Happy holidays to all. Good spirit.
Thank you.
Great.
Just
1 minute.
Okay.
Oh, no. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Tom, this really starts to get us to a point where we have conversations. I've been asking for something like this as long as I've been working at West. It's now possible to digest it, even though I know West is still in transition between this project. It would be very helpful if we saw the use of the other side of the
is because my driver didn't come.